while you're getting settled, I'll call the next case. It's court file A19-0102, Bayside Recycling Company et al. Versus SKB Environmental et al. Council's aware that you'll each have 15 minutes, I'm sure, for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. I see you both have two lawyers at the council table here. I haven't been told that you're splitting any time, so I assume, am I right about that?
The plaintiff, the appellant will not be splitting time.
Your Honor, we will. I'll take 10 minutes, and my co-respondent will take five.
All right, thank you. All right, and then if you would begin your arguments by identifying yourself for the record, please, we can proceed. So, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Richard Snyder. I'm representing the appellants in this matter and the plaintiffs in the case below. The reversible error occurred when the district court abdicated its role to determine a critical legal issue, whether the Goodwill defendants, in this case, owe a fiduciary duty to the plaintiff, AMG Alliance. It's plain in the record that this occurred. The court said, quote, "So I can't tell the jury they owe that duty. The jury would have to find that they owe it." But it's the court's duty and the court's role to determine if a legal duty exists, not the jury's. There are some questions that jurors are just not equipped to deal with, and that includes the existence or non-existence of a legal duty.
Well, counsel, that issue was heavily litigated before the district court in terms of whether there's a fact question as to whether or not there's a duty, correct?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that there was a fact question that's really related to this. There's
There is an underlying fact question of who employed them, who paid their salary, who they worked for. Weren't those questions a fact?
No, the evidence was clear in the case.
Well, let me ask you this question. It was disputed at trial, correct?
I know that the defendants below said that they had one employer. That's not what the evidence was.
But well, I think let me ask you that. Let me be more specific then. There is a disputed fact of whether or not CJ and Matthew worked for Bayside, worked for Alliance, or worked for AMG Alliance, and specifically whether or not they worked for AMG Alliance.
Your Honor, that's the evidence in that case. Those are not fact disputes that are going to necessarily bear upon this legal question. I mean,
it bears on the question because if you have to, there are certain requirements in terms of who you owe a duty to, a fiduciary duty to, in terms of with respect to an employer and an employee.
Yeah, Your Honor.
Part of that inquiry, not the complete inquiry, but part of that inquiry is determining who they worked for.
Yes.
The other thing you need to look at is whether or not there is a high level of trust and confidence placed in those parties. And one of the things that your client argued, was there was a lot of trust and confidence placed in them.
Right.
So it seems to be an underlying fact question of looking at the relationship between the parties.
Well, Your Honor, I will agree that in some instances, the existence of fiduciary duty is going to turn on the existence or non-existence of certain facts. And I'm going to get to that in a moment, that this case is not one of those. But even if the case, like the Toombs case that they cite, in which the issue ends up going to a jury, even if that's the situation, what happens then is you don't just ask the jury, does a duty exist? You go and you ask them those individual questions. You say, who was their employer? Did they have any duties with respect to AMG Alliance? You ask the jury to decide the fact disputes, and then the court then makes the legal determination on duty. And that's the procedure that is outlined in the Gabrielson versus Warneman case. The case was reversed and sent back for that very reason, because this court said, well, that was those are disputed facts that the jury was entitled to resolve. And the Supreme Court said, no, the jury never resolves the issue of duty. The jury resolves fact disputes that may go into it, but it's not going to resolve the issue of duty.
So I'm wondering if it's a question on a special verdict form almost of wording, because you're arguing it's a legal determination, and the question was, did the defendant owe a fiduciary duty to AMG Alliance? If the question instead had been written, is there a fiduciary, did the defendants have a fiduciary relationship with AMG Alliance? Are you such that then a court would decide if there was, then there was a duty. But if the question was there a fiduciary relationship between them, you're arguing that that's undisputed? That whether they had a fiduciary relationship with AMG Alliance?
I think under the circumstances of this case, they had, as a matter of law, a fiduciary duty owed to AMG Alliance.
Fiduciary duty or fiduciary relationship?
Pardon me?
Fiduciary duty or fiduciary relationship?
Well, fiduciary duty.
Which flowed from a relationship that you claim is or as a matter of law they had. Is that right?
Yes, fiduciary, yes. Mm-hmm. And there's three things that go into that. And there's three, I think they're independent reasons why this is a duty that's owed as a matter of law. And the first is Matt's contract, Matt Goodwill's contract. It says AMG Alliance is his employer. And that alone creates
AMG
fiduciary
Alliance.
Duty. Pardon me?
It says AMG Alliance.
It says AMG Alliance is his employer, yes.
Where does it say that Matt's employer is AMG Alliance?
At the very beginning of the document, this is Trial Exhibit 3, and I'm looking at the page number that ends in 788. And it says, in consideration for the offer of employment by Bayside Recycling Company, collectively with its subsidiaries and other affiliates, which shall be deemed to include, without limitation, JASME LLC, DBA
which
Alliance
is, which
Steel.
Which is another name for Alliance Steel.
And AMG Alliance LLC. So that's on page A1 of this employment agreement. He is directly being employed, deemed to be employed by AMG Alliance. Now, that's not it, though, on this particular issue. The contract says he's going to be loyal to AMG Alliance and won't take action against it. So what follows through is all of these prohibitions on what he can and can't do. He can't take action that would be adverse to AMG Alliance's interest. And that is, in essence, what a fiduciary duty is.
Counsel, I want to step back a little bit before we get too far down this road, because I've got some preliminary questions I have. First of all, are there any claims from Bayside that exist? I've gone through everything, and I don't see anything related to Bayside.
Yeah, Your Honor, the issues related to Bayside have been resolved, and we have not independently appealed any of the rulings for or against Bayside from the underlying case. So this is really about AMG Alliance.
Okay,
so
thank you for that clarification, counsel. The other question I have as a preliminary matter is how the issue of the special verdict form has it even been preserved for appeal, or whether or not that's been waived, because it looks like not only was it not objected to, but it was actually agreed to and approved below. And case law makes fairly clear that if that's the case, that issue is waived on appeal.
Well, that argument ignores about 20 pages of discussion during the charging conference.
Discussion is one thing. Was there an objection, though?
Yes,
Let me finish. To the final special verdict form, was there any objection to it, or did the parties agree to that?
Well, what the special verdict form did is it implemented what the court's ruling was. The court's ruling was, I'm not going to decide this, the jury's going to decide it. The plaintiffs argued again and again, no, this is a duty, what is a matter of law.
Counsel, I'm very familiar with the record, but what typically happens is the parties will have discussions with the judge, and there'll be negotiations, for lack of a better term. But ultimately, when you have the special verdict form in its final form, as the district court did here, he said, or she said, okay, does anybody have any objections to it? I want to make sure that whether there are any objections for the record. You can say, you know what, at that point, while we understand this is the district court's ruling, we object to this form because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, I think you're conflating two things with your question. One is, does the verdict form accurately reflect what the judge's decision was to submit this to the jury? And it did. So as formulated, there's no objection because it implements what the judge said the judge was going to do. That doesn't mean there's acquiescence to try this issue to the jury, because all throughout this whole process, they're saying, no, you don't try this to the jury. You instruct the jury that this duty exists as a matter of law. So this is not by any means acquiescence to what this is. The next day after this whole discussion occurred, the plaintiff's counsel went into court and said, we would like to preserve our argument that there should be an instruction regarding fiduciary duty. So this is after the whole special verdict form has been issue occurred. So there's preservation here, Your Honor. I don't think you have to at every single stage of the process keep saying the same thing over and over to the judge. So yes, I suppose they could have said, well, yeah, we think it looks like that's what the judge has got in mind for the instruction, but it's not what we agreed to. They could have said that, but I don't think they need to say that.
With respect to, you started with the agreement for Matthew, and then you said there are other reasons why, yep, as a matter of law. I think specifically with respect to CJ, is there any argument with respect to CJ that as a matter of law he had a fiduciary relationship with AMG Alliance that doesn't depend on a joint venture analysis?
Yes, Your Honor. You have to realize that these Alliance Steel Group companies are not silos. There's a number of companies here that they're not independently run. They're all under common ownership and under common management. Employees at the Goodwill levels don't perform services just for one particular entity. They're performing services across the board. And we see that with both Matt and CJ.
But AMG Alliance is not an Alliance Steel. It's only related to Alliance Steel as a combination as the with respect to the agreement between the
AMG Alliance is the, a related, it's a subsidiary of the Alliance Steel Company, just like
is it a subsidiary?
Bayside is and all the others are.
Is it a subsidiary? How is it a subsidiary of AMG? Or I'm sorry, of Alliance.
Because
Steel?
The owner is AMG. Excuse me. The owner is Alliance Steel.
Well, so Alliance Steel and AMG and Resources are formed.
Correct.
AMG Alliance, 50-50.
Correct. So it's just like any other owner, any other company that Alliance Steel owns. They own 100% of the other companies, they own 50% of this one. But this particular company, you know, CJ, it didn't have its own management. It didn't have, it had a number of laborers that worked for it. All of the front office stuff, all of the management activities were coming from the two partners, the two.
Well, you had
companies.
You had two managers of AMG Alliance, one from Alliance Steel and one from AMG Resources.
Yes.
Correct?
Correct.
But just because you have overlapping boards, just because you have overlapping employees, does not mean that they're separate, that they're not separate entities. AMG Alliance is still a separate entity, correct?
It was formed under
an LLC agreement.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it's related to these other companies of Alliance Steels, and as I was starting to say, there's not an independent manager for this. The employees of Matt and CJ are performing services across all of these companies.
What services did CJ specifically provide to AMG Alliance? My reading on the record is he didn't even talk to the manager from AMG Alliance that had testified at trial.
Well, that's what he said, but that's not the case.
Well, that's what he said, and it seems like the jury believed his trial testimony, and we have to assume on appeal that the jury believed the witnesses that support the jury's decision.
The testimony came in of what sort of responsibility CJ had. You know, putting aside who he claims his employer is, the responsibilities that he performed were undisputed. He never stood up and said, I don't do these things. And these things are managing Alliance Steel's key business relationships, responsible for developing Alliance Steel's business strategy. He's contributing to
For Alliance Steel?
Yes.
The parent's company, not for Alliance.
Well, he knows. He was responsible in AMG Alliance for purchasing equipment. He was purchasing capital equipment across all entities here, including for AMG Alliance. Now, he said at one point in time, well, I never did that. But then, the next day at trial, they showed the picture of him standing in front of the equipment that he had purchased for AMG Alliance. So he's performing services for HERA. I think on this point, the fiduciary duties arise out of principles of agency law. You know, both Matt and CJ are performing services for and were agents of, you know, these companies.
Counsel,
and they owe fiduciary duties.
I think your argument primarily relies on the position that AMG Alliance is a joint venture of Alliance Steel and AMG Resources. But I'm having a hard time following the logic of that, because not only do you have, well, first of all, the agreement is not labeled a joint venture agreement. It's labeled an LLC, which is a very, very different entity than a joint venture, very different responsibilities, very different in terms of its formation, very different in terms of how it works. Second, there's that disclaimer that says this is not a joint venture. Third, there's no control of the assets by either one of the parents. So at least two out of the four requirements for a joint venture under Minnesota law seem to be completely absent. So how is AMG Alliance a joint venture?
Yeah, well, first of all, the fact that it's an LLC is, that's a common vehicle for creation of joint ventures in the business world. But I think the bigger point and the more important point is whether or not AMG is actually a joint venture or not doesn't change the fact that fiduciary duties are owed between the participants of AMG Alliance. They owe duties to each other and they owe duties to the entity itself. And that's true whether it's an LLC or a joint venture. Nothing in this LLC agreement disclaims the fact that these are fiduciary duties. So the participants in this LLC owe fiduciary duties to the LLC, and by extension, so do their high-ranking employees. And this disclaimer issue, if I can just touch on that, and when I stand up, I want to address the third issue of why this is a
matter of law. Well, you're quite a ways over your time, so I'm going to ask you to wrap up the questions. They're the answers that you have to give. You can address anything additional during your rebuttal if you wish.
All right. I'll address the rest of the disclaimer argument when I stand up again.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Mark Bradford for respondents Jem Ash Processing and the Goodwald family members. The Court should affirm because the special verdict form and jury instructions in this case were proper, and in many respects, appellants have waived their challenges. Much of the discussion already has centered on the special verdict form, so I'll start there. And really, the only issue is the question on the special verdict form that asked whether Matt and CJ owe fiduciary duties to AMG Alliance. Unfortunately, the summary judgment order didn't get as much attention as it deserves, because it should come as no surprise that the district court put that question on the special verdict form, because in its summary judgment order, which was issued 13 months before trial, the court repeatedly said that there are fact questions concerning the relationship between CJ and Matt on the one hand and AMG Alliance on the other. And I would refer the court to pages 6, 26, and 38 of that summary judgment order.
So do you think that question 15, and referring back to my earlier question, I guess, to opposing counsel, when the court said, did the defendant owe a fiduciary duty to AMG Alliance, based on what you just said, was the intent of that to say, or is that equivalent to saying, did the defendants have a fiduciary relationship with AMG Alliance?
Right. The answer is yes, it is equivalent, and here is why. What the judge did is it gave the jury a full description of how a fiduciary duty arises under Minnesota law. That is giving the jury an instruction on the law. And the second instruction that the judge gave, it's right in the preliminary instructions, says, I will give you what the law is, and then you apply the facts to that law. So what the jury was determining was whether there was a fiduciary relationship between these two individuals and the company. And if you look at Mr. Ginsburg's closing argument, that's exactly how he argued it. He argued, A, that they were employees, and B, that they had the trust,
confidence,
et cetera.
They were employees of who?
He argued that they were employees of AMG Alliance.
Okay.
But the evidence was, of course, disputed. And this gets back to your question, Judge Reyes, about whether there were disputed fact questions at trial, because the relief that they're asking for here is for this court to determine as a matter of law. This is right in the conclusion of their appellant's brief. They are asking you to determine as a matter of law that a fiduciary duty is owed. And one of the things that they identify that you heard today was the employment agreement. And a citation was made to the third page of that employment agreement, which is at addendum page 67. The very first page of the employment agreement, which is addendum page 65, says, "Dear Matt, Bayside Recycling Corporation, a Minnesota corporation, in parens, the company, is pleased to offer you employment as a scrap metal buyer." That alone creates a question of fact as to whether Bayside was Matt's employer or whether it also included AMG Alliance. There were a number of other disputed facts. AMG Alliance introduced no evidence that it paid any portion of Matt's salary, that it directed any of his activities. And of course, Matt and CJ both said, "We didn't do anything for AMG Alliance." I think CJ said he was on site at AMG Alliance perhaps one time. These are sort of the classic disputed facts that get resolved at trials all the time.
So
I do want, pardon me, Your Honor.
Oh, well, to me it seems like the question, I mean, just based on our discussion, is perhaps imperfect in terms of its meaning to go to a fiduciary relationship, as opposed to whether, if there is a fiduciary relationship, does a legal duty follow that?
Sure.
And so then we get to the jury instructions in any event. So we have just sort of that issue there. But then we get into the, and whether that matters, I guess. And the jury instructions, I think the argument is that they implied that a fiduciary relationship only followed from an employer-employee relationship. So can we speak to that?
Sure.
And is it page 51? Is that, I should have marked this better, that the actual instruction that was given?
So the actual instruction that was given is on page 34 of the instructions.
Or is it in the addendum?
Which is the description of the fiduciary duty. I don't have the addendum page handy, but I know it's 34 of the final instructions. And a couple points on that, Your Honor. This notion that the jury instruction improperly implies that the fiduciary duty is limited to the employer-employee relationship is an argument that has raised on the first time on appeal. And I'll point out in the transcript, page 3088, the district court's going through every instruction. And when it gets to page 34, the court says, 34, question mark, and appellant's counsel says, no objection. So this notion that it improperly limits fiduciary relationships to employer is not one that was made below. On the very next page, page 3089, the court's confirming, and you had no objection to the court's 34, right? Appellant's counsel, correct. Okay. So this argument, this notion that there was some drafting mistake with respect to that instruction was never raised below. With respect to its propriety, though, it's important to note that page 34 of the final instructions is almost a mirror image of what appellants themselves proposed at page 32 of their revised proposed jury instructions. So not only was it waived, they affirmatively requested an almost identical instruction when it came to the employer-employee relationship, and then in addition, that a fiduciary duty arises when somebody vests trust and confidence in another.
I think it's sort of a... I mean, it's different from the requested one because it reverses the order of some ideas in it. One is that, so the way that the instruction actually reads is, in general, all employees have a fiduciary relationship to their employer.
Right.
That's paragraph one. Next paragraph. A fiduciary relationship is characterized as the following. So it doesn't say a fiduciary relationship may exist across a number of things. Employment, trust and confidence. You know, and so when you read it, the argument is it starts with employment, employees have a fiduciary relationship, and then it goes on to define that relationship, implying that it's only an employment relationship, which is, I don't think, what the proposed instruction said.
And, Your Honor, if the appellants had made that precise argument that you just made to the district court, she would have had an opportunity to consider it and to potentially redraft the instruction. That is the stuff of charging conferences. And we had 2 days of charging conferences that span 150 pages. And nowhere did they say, we have any problem with the manner in which you drafted that instruction, other than it doesn't include the joint venture instruction that we want. When it came to the actual drafting of that instruction, you can scour this 3,500-page record
and you will not find one objection to that language. So to say now that the district court committed reversible error in using language that everybody agreed to on the record, and in appellant's case, the judge actually confirmed on page 3089. I just want to be clear, you have no problem with page 34. They said no objection. To now accuse the district court of reversible error is improper. They invited the error, they waived their objection, and we believe the instruction is improper. Instructions don't have to be perfect. They just need to accurately reflect the law as a whole, which this instruction did. And this is why it's important. Only their appellate counsel believes that the instruction was improperly drafted. Mr. Ginsburg, who did the closing argument, clearly didn't think it was limited to employee-employee relationships because he argued to the jury in his closing, and I would implore you to read it, that even absent an employer relationship, these guys owed fiduciary duties to the company, and the only way he could do that is if the instruction provided for a fiduciary duty in those circumstances.
That's interesting you should say that, because I did read the closing.
Yeah.
And there was only one closing by
Mr. Ginsburg.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right after he argues that Matt was employed and talks about the employment agreement. I don't have the transcript page in front of me.
It struck me as, although the district court clearly said in advance that the plaintiffs can argue that there was a fiduciary duty by the Goodwalls directly to AMG Alliance. I took the closing as really quite focused, actually, on Bayside
and
Alliance.
Yeah, but pardon me, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he does talk about the alleged responsibilities that CJ had to AMG Alliance, I believe, in terms of equipment purchases, which was also a disputed fact. And the reason he's arguing the responsibilities is because the second portion of the instruction says if a company vests trust and confidence in another, that can create a fiduciary relationship. So he's seizing on that portion of the instruction that they're now objecting to. I do want to just briefly go back to the first part of your question, Judge Smith, which had to do with the charging conference and the special verdict form. The very first time the special verdict form comes up in the record is page 3059. And that's the judge says, let's go to count four. Now, by this point, the judge has said, I think there's a question of fact on fiduciary duty, so here's what I intend to ask the jury. Did they owe a fiduciary duty? Okay. So we go to the count four of the special verdict form. It's on page 3059. The court says, okay, count four, appellant's counsel, no objection. So they completely waived any objection. Page 3100, same thing. Page 3102, same thing. They were fine with the special verdict form then, they were fine with the jury instructions then, and they lost the case. And they don't get a do-over when they didn't alert the district court to these alleged errors.
One quick question on that. Even if we assume that they did waive it, we can still look at the special verdict form to determine whether or not there are fundamental errors that were made in it or on controlling principles, correct?
Correct. And as we pointed out in our brief, Your Honor, there are a number of cases that reverse district courts when they make the fiduciary determination as a matter of law when there are disputed facts. So not only is there not error, there's certainly not fundamental error that affects a party's rights in this case.
It was
a correct question.
Right, but those questions are the reverse of what we have here, though.
I'm sorry?
Those cases are the reverse of what we have here, though.
We would be standing here arguing error had the district court done anything different.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Bradford. Your time is up. You have 5 minutes, counsel.
May it please the court, counsel, I am Teresa Bevilacqua with Dorsey & Whitney on behalf of SKB Environmental, Inc. And I just want to touch on a few points in the limited time that I have. And just to get back to what is the standard of review for the appeal being brought at this time by the appellants. And with respect to the jury instructions on fiduciary duty and fiduciary relationship, it's abuse of discretion. And they cannot meet that standard of review based on the arguments made in their briefing or made here today by counsel.
And just to be clear, because actually you raised a point I want to discuss. You're talking about standard is abuse of discretion on a motion for a new trial. Is that what you're talking about, the overall?
Yes.
Because
yes, Your Honor.
I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. That's the starting point, but then when we get down to looking at particular issues, whether it's a question of fact, whether it's a question of law, or a mixed question of fact or law, determines what the subsequent standard of review is, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And to Judge Smith's question about the precise wording of question 15 on the special verdict form, would it have been better to say, was there a fiduciary relationship? I think it would have been better to say that, but was it necessary? No. And the reason why it's necessary and why all of this goes to this is harmless error, if any error at all. And of course, we believe no error at all, but if the court reaches a different conclusion, it's harmless because of the other findings made by the jury, which are uncontested on appeal. And I just heard counsel for the appellants confirm that Bayside is not raising any issues in this appeal. And I would ask the court to look at the responses to questions 11A and B and 12A and B on the special verdict form. That was the, does Matthew or C.J. Goodwald owe a fiduciary duty to Bayside? And then question 12 is, was that duty breached? The answer of the jury to questions 11A and B was, yes, there's a fiduciary duty. There's a fiduciary relationship. The uncontested fact was that Bayside was the employer of both Matt and C.J. Goodwald. That was uncontested. The jury checked yes to that box. Question 12, was that duty breached? The jury checked no for both individuals. And you can look at the conduct of these individuals is the same across all of the counts, whether you call it breach of fiduciary duty vis-a-vis AMG Alliance or Bayside or breach of Matthew Goodwald's employment agreement. It's all the same conduct, no matter what legal label you put on it. And the factual finding of the jury was that conduct, whatever it was at trial that they determined, was not a breach of the fiduciary duty owed by the Goodwald employees to Bayside. Therefore,
couldn't it differ though, depending on what Bayside's scope of business was versus AMG Alliance's scope of business? I mean, I don't know that they're necessarily the same.
And there you can look at the other findings, Your Honor, which are this was not found to be a corporate opportunity for either Bayside or AMG Alliance. And if you look at the trial court's order on post-trial motions, she marshals and walks through all of the evidence that supports the jury's verdict with respect to count five and the corporate opportunity doctrine. They found, vis-a-vis C.J. Goodwald, this was not a corporate opportunity for Bayside or for AMG Alliance.
And that necessarily determines, because the definition of corporate opportunity necessarily determines whether there's a fiduciary breach or not.
Not quite, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because there could be a breach separate and apart from the corporate opportunity, but the way this case was tried, the themes and theories presented at trial by the plaintiffs was that this ash opportunity is what was really taken. The ash opportunity and failing to raise that opportunity to their employer was the breach of fiduciary duty. That it was made as part and parcel of the same argument. As a matter of law, the answer to your question was no. I wouldn't argue that. But I'm saying that's the way they tried their case below, and those were the facts presented and determined by the jury. And because the jury found those facts vis-a-vis other counts, it means it's harmless error, if any error at all, on count four, question 15A and B. I do also want to address very quickly, Alliance Steel is not a party to this case and never has been. And I think that's critical when you talk about the flow of fiduciary duties, when you talk about the joint venture argument, and it is and only has ever been an argument, not a reality. It is an LLC agreement that creates AMG Alliance LLC, and there are four elements to creating a joint venture, as Judge Ray has noted, and this plaintiff, AMG Alliance, fails to meet two of those four elements because of multiple provisions in the unambiguous LLC agreement. Judge Burke found, as a matter of law, the LLC agreement was unambiguous. That's in the addendum at 29.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up here,
yes.
Counsel.
And there are multiple other provisions in the LLC agreement that also demonstrate you cannot meet the second essential element of being a joint venture, which is the joint ownership and control over the assets. And those are sections 3.05, 4.02, and 10.06, the integration clause. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Snyder, you have rebuttal.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. I think I can quickly just address those breach questions because what the jury found with respect to Bayside has doesn't control the issue of breach as involving AMG Alliance. They're very different companies, very different capabilities. AMG Alliance apparently the jury felt that this was not an opportunity that Bayside could have exploited. That's not the case for AMG Alliance, which has AMG Resources as one of its partners that's doing this very sort of thing elsewhere and has the capability and has engineers on staff and design engineers to handle this sort of thing. So,
the jury didn't make a finding about the corporate opportunity with respect to AMG Alliance?
Well, the corporate opportunity question is, it's a term of art that's used in the usurpation of corporate opportunities cases, and it requires a finding of active management. Active management isn't a standard that's required for fiduciary duties to arise. All employees have fiduciary duties, whether they're active management or not. But then if you look at the actual jury instruction that was given, it said active management means you're a director or an officer. And we weren't claiming that he was ever a director or an officer of this. So that does not bear on the harmless error analysis at all. I did want to get onto this issue of the fiduciary relationship, Your Honor, and the instruction. The instruction, we did object to the instruction because it didn't include the part that says AMG Alliance owes a fiduciary duty. Fiduciary duty is owed to AMG Alliance. With that, it would have been okay, but without that, it really is asking the jury to determine whether someone was employed by another entity, and that's not
what the jury instruction was limited to. It did talk about all employees having a fiduciary relationship to the employers, but also talks about how fiduciary relationship is characterized by a fiduciary who enjoys a superior position in terms of knowledge and authority and in whom the other party places a high level of trust and confidence. And we review that to determine whether or not that instruction is consistent with the law, and it is consistent with the law. Like your position was you wanted to have the district court reach a legal conclusion on that issue, but the district court said, no, that's a...
Well, the instruction, as Judge Smith pointed out, is really can be read by, especially lay jurors, not lawyers that are looking at this, as meaning that these fiduciary duties are what is applicable in the employment relationship. So it doesn't really ever give a jury instructions to go beyond an employee-employee relationship to determine the existence of fiduciary duty.
I'm not sure if I follow you, counsel, because what I read talked about the employee-employee relationship, but then it also specifically had the definition of fiduciary relationship and fiduciary, which includes placing a high level of trust and confidence.
Yeah, it seems to be defining the relationship for the context of the employee-employer, the very part above that. So that's what I think is confusing.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Can you respond to the argument that no objection was made to that, the jury instruction at the time, to preserve that objection?
Well, they did make an objection. They said we want to have the additional language put into it. So, and the court said no. And then so on the next day of the conference, counsel came in and said, we're preserving our rights. We want to preserve our objection to this. And if you need a citation to the record, I can give it to you. It's on page excuse me. Transcript 3109. We would like to preserve our argument that there should be an instruction. So this was preserved. This is an issue of, we don't have to get into the facts here to determine that these individuals owe a fiduciary duty. But even if we did have to get into that in this particular case, that the jury just can't connect these disparate dots together to come up with this. The jury has to be instructed. The issue has to be put to the jury in a way that they would be able to answer discrete fact questions, not this overall globular question of whether a duty exists.
Speaking of connecting,
I think there can.
Speaking of dots, connecting dots, counsel, can you cite any case law for the proposition that one entity automatically owes a fiduciary duty to an affiliated entity, specifically a joint venture? Because it seems at a minimum it's once removed, if not twice removed, with respect to CG and Matt's employment under Bayside, then being a parent, then having Alliance as a parent, then Alliance has another entity that formed AMG. So you've got, it's really twice removed. Can you cite any case law for the proposition that automatically entitles requires a fiduciary duty to be followed there?
Yeah, I see my time is up if I'm permitted to respond to this. I think the best case and the most analogous case to this is Liberty Mutual versus Ward that we cite in the brief. And in that case, an employee, much like the defendants in this case, was employed by a single entity in a Liberty Mutual company and had duties with respect to that company. But also, when he started, signed an employment handbook that said he's going to owe duties to all of the family of Liberty Mutual companies. And one of those was an affiliate, and an affiliate that was involved in third-party administration of claims. Well, during the course of his employment, he learned that there was going to be a settlement with a big policyholder on asbestos claims, and there would be a lot of TPA work to be done. And so what he did is he took that information, went out and started his own TPA company, got that, solicited the customers, got the TPA work from the policyholder, and to the detriment of the affiliate of Liberty Mutual. And the court held that he owed a fiduciary duty in that context to that affiliate, even though he wasn't directly employed by it. So the fiduciary duty extends well beyond employer-employee relationship.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Thank you, counsel. The matter was extensively briefed and well argued here today. It's been helpful to the court, and we'll take the matter under advisement, and we will have a decision out in the matter within 90 days.